Welcome back to the Gridiron Pulse. Hope all you all are doing well. Hope all you all are doing well. That's a smooth opening right there, Jacob. Good start. Well, I know we got some stuff to talk about. We were covering a little bit before we got on air here, but of course we have Georgia portal commits that we're going to talk about. Just got some other random stuff, you know, Georgia baseball, Braves baseball, you know, Hawks not making the playoffs. We will definitely touch on that, but most important thing that we got to touch on is Georgia landing 3 commits in a singular day. I'm pretty sure it was within a couple hours of each other. It seemed like back to back to back. But we can first start off with the one that I am the most excited about, at least that I thought that we needed the most, and that was an edge rusher. We got the Elo Madozi from Army, 6'3", 245. Underclassmen, so he still has that room to grow too. So this isn't like a 1-year rental like with Josh McCray, where I believe he's in his last year. Mm-hmm. Yes. So Elo Madozi coming from West Point to Georgia. Jacob, how do you feel about us adding this guy from Army and filling that edge rusher role?
Yeah, I'm super excited. He's definitely one of the more interesting, intriguing portal prospects coming from West Point. And like you said, he's got those 2 years of eligibility remaining. And I think he's going to fit right in with us, dude. He's going to bring a lot of versatility to the linebacker and edge room. It seems like more of a specialty pass rusher. He had 6.5 sacks last year, I do believe. I mean, I saw some of his highlight tapes and stuff after he committed, and dude looks like a freak. He's like just absolutely shredded, and he's definitely a speed guy off the edge, but also has the ability to bring some power with him as well. I'm very interested about this guy for sure.
Oh, awesome. And, you know, as we've said plenty of times, this was obviously a role that we knew we wanted to fill. We don't really have a proven guy on the edge, and whether he comes in and makes that immediate impact or not, once again, like I said, he's an underclassman, so he has room to grow. He's just going to add more depth. And, of course, with this Georgia D-line, all we know is depth and rotation. So, yes, very interested to see what he can do. So, I don't know how much you've looked into him. Is he a power rusher? Would you say he like has that bend around the corner where he can just contort his body? What do you kind of see him, like his archetype, I guess you could say?
He's definitely a speed guy for me. I mean, a little bit undersized for being like your true edge defender, like that Bo Atkinson guy from North Carolina that we're also after. Mm-hmm. He's like 6'6", 260. So that's like your classic stand-up defensive end, like what you actually think of when you think of an edge rusher. This guy to me seems like definitely more of a specialty pass rusher, and he utilizes speed, but he's also very strong. I mean, coming from West Point, bros in the Army, like, you gotta be strong. I think he's definitely an interesting prospect, and he also has a lot of history playing off-ball linebacker as well. So, I mean, being able to see him being used somewhat of how we use Jalen Walker in the past would be really cool. Although we don't necessarily need any help in the off-ball linebacker room with all the talent that we have there. There's going to be fighting for playing time all year round. So I definitely think he's more of a speed guy, but can also convert speed to power. And a very strong pass rusher. I mean, just overall, it just looks like a really, really good player.
Oh, sweet. We need all of that we can get in that department. You can never have enough depth. And we added some more depth in the defensive tackle room, too. We added Josh Horton from Miami. This was a highly rated guy out of Georgia. He went to Langston Hughes High School and went to Miami. Didn't really kind of crack into a role there. Enters the portal, and now he's coming back home to Georgia, and if I'm looking up some more stuff on him, he's listed as 6'4", 295, so once again, big body, and once again, that was a room where, you know, us and Kirby were on the same wavelength. We're looking at, when we were looking at that spring depth chart, and we were going through, we said, okay, we got Xavier McLeod, and then Kristen Miller, and then a bunch of young guys that are trying to find their way in. And even Xavier McLeod, who didn't play all that much last year, at least he didn't have like a huge impact as he was, you know, first year at Georgia. So adding another guy in this room, once again, the same way as Elo Madozi, just adding depth and seeing what he can be, because once again, he is a younger guy and he can grow and develop. And we're going to see what he can do at least this year. I don't know if he's going to be in that Xavier McLeod realm where we're not really expecting him to come in and be that instant impact his first year, or it could be a situation where we know that we're kind of thin or thinner than usual at the defensive tackle, and we want him to come in and immediately be a contributor. So that's kind of my thinking, at least with Joshua Horton right now.
Yeah, I remember this guy from when we were recruiting him out of high school. He was committed to us for like the longest time, and then he was a signing day flip to Miami. It's kind of pissed that we lost out on that, but I guess they always find their way back home one way or another. But to me, this guy definitely seems like more of a depth piece for us, for sure, given that we already have several proven names. I mean, he's going to be behind some of the guys like Jordan Hall, Big Baby, and Christian Miller, Xavier McLeod, like you said. I think he slides into more of that traditional defensive tackle role because he's not big enough to be like a true nose tackle, like what we'd be looking for at that position. He's not just like a, I don't know, like a run plugger, just like a big enough guy to do that. But he's definitely going to bring some juice in the pass rush from a defensive tackle position, which is nice. Be looking forward to that.
Oh yeah, no, you're all. Anytime you can get any type of pass rush with a D tackle, that's icing on the cake. Because you're not really expecting guys to do that.
Yeah,
I kind of am with you in this because we're kind of making up for, at least when we had Ja Jarrett, we saw him as maybe the next Jordan Davis just because he was massive and just plugging holes. He, of course, enters the portal because he couldn't really carve out a role. So it's just about reloading that room, even if you're not replacing a, you know, proven commodity. Just having a body in there is very important, you know?
Absolutely. And then we also got a good old Josh McCray from Illinois, big old power back. He's got one of the more fun highlight reels to look at if you like just watching running backs just destroy tacklers. I mean, he is big, tall, fast, and strong. It's exactly what we were looking for. Someone to pair with Nate Frazier, have that thunder and lightning combo. I know a lot of teams talk about it, but not a lot of teams do it as well as we do. I mean, it's just a kind of fact right there. We can go all the way back to Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel, Todd Gurley and Keith Marshall. Like just that thunder and lightning combo, it would be with Josh McCray and then Nate Frazier as well. It's like, what is he, 6'1", 240 or something like that? 6'1", 235? Just a big, powerful running back. Definitely someone that we're going to use in goal line formations. Just going to get a lot of goal line carries. I think last year he had 600 yards and 10 touchdowns. So that's definitely going to be a nice addition to the backfield for sure.
Oh, yes. And this addition is not going to seem flashy or that big to most people because, I mean, immediately people just look like, okay, Georgia's adding an Illinois running back. Like, cool, whatever. And on the stat sheet this year, Josh McCray may not have eye-popping stats. I can guarantee he won't because he's just going to be splitting carries and not even splitting, honestly. Just most of them are going to go to Nate Frazier. But I can already see it. Josh McCray is going to have 2 to 3 carries this year to move the chains on a 4th and inches or a 4th and 1 somewhere that you can't measure just how important those type of chain movers are. Because they just don't show up on the stat sheet, and he won't have like that much yards per carry. He averaged 5.2 yards per carry last year with Illinois. So yeah, that's pretty good. Making the transition to the SEC. But I just see this guy being – he's going to have several carries this year to move the chains, and we are recruiting this guy to – Hey, on 4th and 1 against Ole Miss and Sanford or in Knoxville, like, you need to get those big legs of yours and just get 1 inch or a couple of inches. And then, hey, who knows? Maybe he finds himself even more in a not just strictly goal line guy, and he can, you know, start to, you know, take some carries away from some other guys. This raises more competition for guys like Chauncey Bowens and even Rod Robb, which this also shows me that we're still not sure about his health. Because if we were sure about Roderick Robinson's health going into this year, I guarantee we probably wouldn't be going into the portal for a running back from Illinois, especially like a redshirt senior or whatever he is, you know? So.
Yeah, I definitely think he chose us just to have, like, it's like, hey, I was able to go into the SEC, play big boy football, and then just hopefully, I mean, if you have a similar stat line to last year, 500, 600 yards, 8 or 10 touchdowns, that's going to get him drafted. And, I mean, teams are definitely looking for a power back because, I mean, I feel like offenses are kind of morphing back into what they used to be, where it's like heavily prioritizing running the football, just getting north and south, up and down really quick. And that's what he's going to do really well this year. I'm really excited to watch this guy play, especially because last year in the bowl game against South Carolina, one of our next door neighbors is he's a huge Illinois fan, like Illinois everything, and it's hilarious. We were watching that game last year against South Carolina, and he was just like, he couldn't stop talking about this guy. Like, man, this guy's the truth. He's a strictly like downhill runner, and he went off in that Illinois South Carolina bowl game. And yeah, I mean, he was just like, I'm so excited to have this guy come back next year. Like, Illinois football is gonna be on the map again. Like, all this kind of stuff. And we're just sitting there like, okay. But now he's coming to UGA, so. I definitely think he's going to find himself a role. Running back's one of those positions where you can kind of just like walk in and just kind of get her done. Just learn the playbook real quick, learn the goal line packages real quick, and then you're going to be able to play like immediately. We saw it with ETN last year. I believe he was also a spring transfer. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it on him. Big old power back. He's going to run through somebody's face.
Man, poor Illinois. You really, honestly, going into this year, I thought that Illinois could have had a chance to be, and not that I'm saying that Josh McCray, like, completely changes their chances of being any good, but I kind of saw Illinois as potentially being this year's Indiana. You know, just that team that, because they have their quarterback, is it Altmaier, coming back. I mean, they went like 9-3 last year. They were like 14.
They ended up 10-3 after they beat South Carolina.
Yeah, they were not that far away from the playoff last year, if you really think about it. But yeah, one of your biggest contributors just decides, you know what, I'll just go willingly be a backup or third string at Georgia. It's got to be rough for those schools. But hey, now you know how we feel in basketball. So
that's very true. Speaking of basketball, I mean, I don't think we had any. We haven't had much movement in the basketball portal yet, or at all this weekend. I mean, it's been very quiet on Ian Jackson and Stojakovic. We haven't seen or heard anything else, which is kind of concerning. Hope Mike White is not getting stuffed into a locker right now.
Yeah. We've seen a lot of, you know, usually it's similar to football, like right after the national championship and like in that December window, that's when you usually see a lot of the transfers and stuff. Similar to basketball, like right after March Madness, coaches are moving, players are moving around. It's basically the free agency time period. And it was looking really good. You know, we added a few guys in that early, you know, portion of this spring transfer. And then it looked like, oh, about to get Aaron Reed. We're about to get Ian Jackson, Stojakovic. It's cooled off a little bit. I'm not holding off of any hope, but yeah, it's definitely seemed like we're at least cooling off on the portal recruiting realm right now. Unfortunately,
we got these football commitments. I mean, they, like you said, they all hit at the same time. On3 gave us a graphic of all three of them at the same time. I was like, okay, Kirby gave us a little Easter basket right there. That was nice.
I've always been so curious about how stuff like that works. So, like, okay, let's say I'm a 5-star recruit. I go on a visit and I tell Kirby Smart, like, hey, listen, like, I'll commit right now, honestly. Like, I'm ready. It's like, I don't know if there's anything to do with like the coaches have input on like when they want the players to go public because it's all Hayes Fawcett and On3 graphics nowadays. So, like, I've just always been curious if Kirby's like, all right, I know you want to commit, son, but I'm gonna wait. Just wait till you hit up Hayes Fawcett for that edit. I got perfect timing. Like, we're gonna get these 3 in a row. We're gonna get some momentum on the trail. They're gonna post the Georgia's been on fire today with 3 commitments. I don't know. I'm just curious about how that whole like going public with a recruitment works in the world of college football.
Yeah, I have honestly no idea. It's probably going to be different for just about every single one. Because, like you said, it could be a 5-star, and then Kirby could be like, all right, do it right now. Hit him up for the edit. Go. Go, dogs. I'm going to tweet it out. Got it in my drafts. And then I'm sure for like someone that's going to be more of a depth piece, like a 3 or 4-star lesser rated guy, or someone that we're not as high on, it's like, all right, we're going to wait a little bit. And then we're gonna wait a little bit more, a little bit more, and it's like, okay, now we can do it. I'm sure it's very different. I would like to know how Mike White is doing that as well, because it's like, how are we in with like seemingly everyone, like every big name that's been in the portals, like Georgia's in on them, blah 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 blah, and it's like, wait like 5 days and then you hear nothing.
Yeah, but you also have to be careful because it's like, what does Georgia's in the mix mean? That could mean so many things. That could mean like Mike White sent him a DM or something. You know what I mean? Like, who even knows like what that means? It's so just he got left on red.
I know, dude. I want to talk about this one guy real quick. We're linked in the top three for one of Florida's transfer point guards, Denzel Aberdeen. He was originally committed to Mike White when he was at Florida. 6'5 junior from Orlando. Averaged 7.7 points, 1.7 rebounds, and 1.4 assists on 19 minutes a game for, unfortunately, what is the national champion Florida Gators. Definitely like the sound of that, though. I mean, we got a couple guards already to kind of take up for what we're missing out on with Silas Demery, but none of them have really looked like this guy, like 6'5 junior guard. Like, that's a big time point guard. I like the fact that he was originally committed to Mike White out of high school.
Oh, and especially a guy that has deep tourney run experience. I mean, and I'm looking at this guy's numbers. I thought originally it was like, oh, okay, so this guy was like a bench player or something. Like, no, he played 14 minutes, 19 minutes, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, and 18 minutes. So he was a good role player, and he against Maryland had 12 points on 19 minutes on 71% shooting, and then in the Natty he had 7 points on 50% shooting in 18 minutes. So he. This is a guy where, yeah, I'd take a guy that has, that national championship, unfortunately, experience under his belt. And again, yeah, for him to commit to Mike White and state of Florida, most people commit to a coach, not a school. But he stuck it out, and now is he in the portal? Like, has he entered? Okay, that's what I thought. I don't know if we were tampering or anything. Yeah. That'd be pretty sweet. I'd take that any day of the week.
Yeah, absolutely. Like those big guards that can kind of get it done down low. Where do you want to go to next here, Coleman?
Ooh, we got, what do we got here? We got Georgia baseball, we got Braves baseball. I mean, I guess we could just go ahead and
One of
hit the
those is good,
baseball.
one of those is bad.
Yeah, well, let's start with the bad first so we can end on a good note with the baseball. So let's just go ahead and touch on the Georgia sweep of Vanderbilt. Dang.
Got swept by Vanderbilt. Yeah.
Yeah,
That was
that's my fault.
It was Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, so they didn't have a game on Easter. I'm gonna look up some of these box scores here real quick.
Yeah, I got them pulled up here. So we lost
Lost a
three
pitcher's
to.
duel on Thursday, 3-1.
Yes, it was looking like it was going to be, typical Georgia bombs away. Slade Alford hits a homer in the first inning, and then no team scores until the seventh inning.
Yep.
Vanderbilt takes the 2-1 lead, then they get one in the eighth, and then we just couldn't do anything.
This was the one that I paid attention to the most. I watched all of them, but like this one I was actually like watching the whole time. It was because it was Brian Curley pitching. You know how he is with his antics on the mound, dude. He's hilarious. But yeah, he was throwing a really good game, and then in the seventh inning it just kind of got, I mean, it didn't necessarily get away from him. He got above his pitch count of what he's normally throwing, just got slightly more erratic, missed a couple pitches, and then they just started hitting some bombs. That was a tough one to swallow for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it was good. At the very least, of course, getting swept is not good, but it was good to see Trey Phelps back out there. He had been injured a lot. I know the first game he didn't do anything, and then the second game he got a hit, but he struck out three times in that game. So not great, but again, getting back into it. And then I don't believe he played in the last game of the series. So got to
Yeah, but
get him back.
we got boat raced in that second game. We lost 13-7. That's pretty bad.
No,
It was
yeah,
like it was
definitely.
13-1 or something like that. And then I look up and it's like, oh, we scored seven. That's how it happens sometimes, but sometimes it happens to us with our pitching too. And then
Oh,
the last
that
game we
second.
lost 5-2.
No, I was just gonna say that second game is the classic or rare instance where we lose 13-7 and the hit count was 13 Vandy, 7 Georgia. So interesting there.
Yeah, so finishing off that sweep is it's not great. Georgia baseball has been kind of on a skid lately. We started off SEC play 8-0 with two sweeps, and I think we're what, like
Let's
two and
see.
10? 2-9 since then in SEC play. Regardless, I think we're like 10-10 or 10-9 in SEC play.
Let me do a quick search. Let's see.
We started off red hot with the sweep
We're
of
10-8.
Florida. We're 10-8. So we started off sweeping Florida. We won 2 out of 3 against Kentucky. Then we swept Auburn. And then we got swept by Texas. Won the series versus Arkansas, which was nice. And
Yeah.
then swept by Vandy.
This is a stat right here. We're 24-2 this year at home, 6-7 away from Foley Field. So 3-0 in neutral though, and I mean, hey, all I'm saying is Omaha's a neutral site, so that's all I'm
Yeah.
saying.
I
But
hope
no,
we get to
as
meet the
the
Super Regional again. That would be cool.
yeah, no, that'll be cool. And I do want. Obviously, you want your team to play good, but I really want us to kind of pick it up here at least in the back half of the season because classic cliche with baseball, it's not the best team, it's which team is the hottest. So we got to get hot at the right time. That's all it takes, and see what we can do there.
Do a little look ahead here. We got Clemson upcoming this week, I know. That is on Tuesday. So we play Clemson at Clemson, which would be a really good win to help bolster that away record. Clemson's actually number 2 in the country now. That is a very good baseball team. So that's on Tuesday. And then let's see. Looks like we have Oklahoma at home this upcoming weekend. And Thursday, Friday. I don't see us here on Friday.
Yep, it's
Yeah.
Friday, April 25th.
Yeah. We play Oklahoma Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And they're number 14. So, I mean, pretty much just about any SEC opponent you get this late on in the year, it's going to be a ranked versus ranked matchup, unless it's some bummy team like Missouri.
Missouri.
Missouri's winless in the SEC this year. Yeah. Yeah, so we got Thursday, Friday, Saturday series against Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah.
Then
And
I
then I
take
believe we have a midweek against Kennesaw after that.
after that. Nice. That'll be cool. We've already played them a couple times this year.
Oh, yeah. They were very close to beating us
I
early in
know
the year.
they were up like way big on us in one game, and then we just came back and it was like 16-14 or something like that. Just like a crazy score for a baseball game.
Well, yeah, fortunately Georgia gets swept. Still a lot of season left. Got to get hot at the right time. But now let's move on to some good news. There hasn't been very many good news. Oh my gosh, Jacob, I just realized the Georgia bad, Atlanta good conspiracy theorists are having a field day. I just realized this. Because I was thinking about to the one of our first episodes. I was talking about how Georgia baseball sweeps and then Braves got swept or something. Now it's a complete opposite. The Braves sweep the Twins, and we needed something. We need to get on a run here. One of the biggest bright spots this whole series, Alex Verdugo gets four hits in the second game of the series against the Twins. Whenever we picked this guy up, I was pretty excited about it because I had just known, again, I hadn't. He hadn't done much in like the past like 1 or 2 years, but his early years on the Red Sox, he was a good player, and he just hasn't been able to find a role. But he gets four hits, and he helps the Braves get that sweep over the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah, I get happy whenever we actually sign someone that I've literally heard of before. Doesn't seem to happen all too often, but yes, I heard of Alex Verdugo. I was like, okay, so this guy's he's in Triple-A Gwinnett. Okay. It's like he's playing well in Triple-A Gwinnett. I was like, all right, what are we doing? Let's move them on up, like, because our outfield has been absolute garbage lately, dude. It's been so bad. Even Michael Harris has just not lived up to in any way, shape, or form of what he should be this year after this development that he's had. I think, what is he entering in his third full season with the Braves? That sounds right. Yeah, definitely had high expectations for him for sure. But he's starting to pick it up a little bit more later as well, as long also with like Matt Olson and Drake Baldwin. Drake Baldwin was like, you know how they have all these crazy stats in baseball, like with all the crazy acronyms that none of them make sense. But like Drake Baldwin, all he was doing was hitting the ball really, really hard and really, really far and getting out like every single time, just hitting it right to someone. Just think like MLB The Show, you hit a perfect, and the
Yeah, let's not
shortstop
forget
just
all
makes like an
that.
insane diving catch, and it's like out. Yeah, that's basically what he had been doing. But he hit his first home run in Truist Park. He's got two on the year, I believe. It's very, very exciting young player for sure.
Oh yeah, and baseball, whatever, there's like expected batting average, expected. Yeah, he probably has like a high expected batting average, and no, for sure. And one of so th that's good. Glad Drake is coming along, and we need that catcher position. The shortstop position for the Braves this year is just it's seemingly we're not getting anything. Orlando Arcia doesn't start very good. Then we got this Nick Allen guy, who I'm pretty sure he went 0 for 4, 0 for 3 in every single game of the series. And again, the shortstop isn't a position where there's a high volume of really good offensive and defensive shortstops, but we need to get something offensively out of that position group because, I mean, there's just a big hole in the lineup, and it's wherever our shortstop is batting in the lineup.
That was obviously, I mean, that was one of my things I was clamoring for this offseason. Just like sign somebody, dude, like anyone. But they were just like, no, I guess we're gonna just roll with Orlando Arcia again. We'll get this Nick Allen guy in here and we'll switch him off every now and then. Because I mean, Orlando's obviously been known for his defense, and he's played horrible defense this year too. Horrible defense, and he can't hit. So I'm at least guessing that's why they've been keeping Nick Allen in, because neither of them can hit. But Nick Allen plays a relatively solid defensive shortstop. But that's what Orlando had been known for doing. But he's just not this year. All of his stats and everything are like, what is it, like outs above average? I think that's what That's like the defensive metrics that they use in baseball. Outs above average is his is like terrible. It's the worst on the team. So he's not even pulling up the defensive side of the bargain. That's probably why he's not playing too much.
Probably. And if we do a little look ahead here on the Braves side of things, we got a series coming up against the Cardinals, which let's see, what are the Cardinals? How what are they? Are they 9-13? Okay, so pretty much like us, essentially.
What are we not?
Okay, these next three series right here. So we got the Cardinals, we got the Diamondbacks, which that'll be, okay, like that'll be a little bit of a challenge. Then we got at Rockies. I want everyone to be hitting bombs and extra base hits when we go at Colorado. I always look forward to going on these series at Colorado. I also just want to go to a game in this stadium, and I just want to see
Me
people hit the ball all over the park.
it looks cool too. I love playing at the Rocky Stadium course field on the game. You just get
Oh,
that elevation with the pop and the bat is insane. Love it.
yeah. No
Yeah,
doubt.
if we
And
could
then, of
take
course,
at least take this Cardinal series, gotta start one by one. Gotta take the Cardinal series first. Don't necessarily have to sweep all of them, just win the series. Just gain a game up. Now that Diamondback series, like you said, that's obviously gonna be a much tougher series. They're probably got a pretty good record this year. Let's see. They are
13-9.
13-9. Okay. Yeah. So I mean they're in the tough division too. They're in the one with the Dodgers, the Giants, and the Rockies
The
and
Padres.
Padres, yeah.
That's a
Yeah,
tough
they're in a tough
division.
division. That's a tough division, dude. Now I see why the Rockies always have like the highest draft picks.
And they're seemingly always still just terrible.
Yeah, honestly. All right, we can move on here. What do we got next? You want to talk a little NBA playoffs?
Yeah, we can go ahead. Disclaimer, as I am here to tell you guys, I would say that I'm an NBA casual. I was
Me
way
too.
more into the NBA. Like the height of my NBA fandom was whenever it was the Cavs Warriors just going back and forth in like the 2015, 2016, like those years.
Yeah.
Kind of fallen out of it, but I follow the NBA because of course I'm a Hawks fan. And if the Hawks aren't in it, then I'm rooting for the Timberwolves because I want the Ant-Man to go get himself a ring. But yeah, that is kind of what my NBA fandom is at right now. We on that topic, Minnesota gets the win over the Timberwolves or over the Lakers. They lead 1-0 in the series, so nice
Yeah,
little win there for our Timberwolves.
I watched most of that game until I didn't really need to because they beat the crap out of them. They beat them pretty bad. What was the score here? 117 to 95. Yeah. Most of the playoff games this weekend were honestly pretty boring. The Pacers destroyed the Bucks. The only good game seemingly was Denver over the Clippers. It was 112 to 110 in overtime. And then I watched a little bit of this Knicks Detroit Pistons game. That was pretty good. The Knicks went on like a 21-0 run in the fourth quarter or something like that. And then after that, Minnesota destroys the Lakers. That would be so awesome just to see the Lakers get swept in the first round. Because everyone always says, like, what does Shannon Sharp keep doing? He's like, OKC, like, whatever, Lakers in five.
Oh, yeah, the TikTok edits, they go
Yeah.
crazy with that stuff, dude.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what a funny one, because, dude, they're pretty funny. Not gonna lie. I don't agree with them, but at least they make me laugh.
How about the Thunder literally beating the Grizzlies by 50?
Yeah.
130 to 80. Holy, I
Yeah.
just looked up. Wow.
That is a destruction in basketball. That is hilarious.
I was kind of not low on the Thunder, but I just always hesitate to pick these super young teams that are the
Yeah.
one seed that had really good regular seasons. And just, I don't know. Because, as a Hawks fan, we know a thing or two about having a really good regular season and no one really believing in us and us being like, so you guys are going to watch. And then the haters being right. Classic 26. I hate that the 20, our favorite team, the best basketball team, at least professionally in my lifetime, is the poster child for just regular season merchant. There's every time there's a really good team like that starts off like 20-4 and people know they're not gonna win the championship. It's just 2016 Hawks, 2016 Hawks in the comments section. So
Yeah. I mean, that could potentially be both Cleveland and OKC this year, but they both won by a pretty wide margin, so it probably won't be. Cleveland's got some firepower too, for sure, with Donovan Mitchell, Evan Mobley, and then Jared Allen. They're a big team. They run with two like traditional big men, with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. I believe they're both over 7 feet tall, or at least really close to it.
This trio for the Cleveland in this game one, you got, of course, Donovan Mitchell. He had 30. Darius Garland, he had 27. And then Ty Jerome, he had 28. I mean, when you
Yeah.
have that three stat line from your three guards, I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. Actually just got this notification about the Hawks as well. Landry Fields fired as general manager from the Atlanta Hawks.
Oh,
Like right now.
hey. Honestly, at this point, something's got to change. We are in such this. I mean, we are in purgatory. We're in no man's land. Every single offseason, it seems Trae Young is in trade talks and stuff. But hey, who knows? I'm interested to see what we can do because I don't claim to be an expert on this. I don't know what we should do because I always go back and forth on if we should try to just blow it all up or if we need to still try to build around Trae Young. I genuinely don't know what the best course of action is. We got to do something. We can't keep doing this.
Yeah, I feel like Jalen Johnson honestly solves all of our problems. Like, we need someone like Jalen Johnson who didn't play for the entire second half of the season, tore his labrum. But, I mean, going into a season with Trae Young, year two Dyson Daniels in our system, at the three, having Jalen Johnson, Onyeka Okongwu, and then actually getting a center other than Clint Capella would be sick. I feel like that would be like the only thing that we need. Like, dude, imagine that lineup with like Evan Mobley or Jared Allen from the Cavs. Just someone for Trae to just spam lobs to. Just that's really all we need. I mean, Jalen Johnson was playing like an all-star before he got hurt. He was averaging 20 and 8 rebounds, I think. 22 and 8 or something like that, which is huge. I mean, he was efficient from the floor. We got Dyson Daniels, who's a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year and Most Improved Player of the Year, which is very, I mean, that exceeded my expectations for what I had with for him coming into the year. I mean, at least I think what my problem is, like you said, they're kind of like the Hawks are kind of like the Falcons in terms of like just being in purgatory. Like, the Falcons have been 7-10 or 8-9 for the past like 5 years. The Hawks have been in the play-in tournament for the past like 5 years. So something's got to change. For the Falcons, I think it's a little bit deeper rooted problem for sure. I hate the owner and hate the general manager. But for the Hawks, I don't necessarily think that Landry Fields was the problem. It's the wrestlers, dude. We have like a 25-year-old Nepo baby running the team.
What?
It's Tony Wrestler and his son. I mean, he gave his son, as soon as he gave his son like full control of the team, he's literally like us. He's like a 25-year-old, like just recently graduated college, except he has a billion gajillion dollars. He's just a Nepo baby ruining a franchise.
Rose running NBA 2K my franchise in real life.
And then that's why I
But
said a similar problem with the Falcons. As soon as Arthur Blank goes, he's got like three kids that are just going to come up and take the reins. Like, we're never going to get out of the Arthur Blank or wrestler, like, hell that it is. I mean, it's terrible. Being a fan of both of those teams compounded on each other is pretty bad. And when you got the Braves owned by Liberty Media, who doesn't want to spend any money, it's just triple bad.
I mean, Jacob, you are the resident spokesman for Atlanta, I think, on this show. Because obviously me, I'm very much, obviously I love the Georgia teams. I love my Hawks, my Braves. But you seem to have it all figured out. I mean, why don't you, I mean, hey, I don't know if there are any links for Hawks GM on LinkedIn or anything, but they probably should maybe think about it.
I mean, not qualified at all, but that's fine. just a watcher of the team. And like you said, the height of my NBA fandom was during that Cavs and Warriors like kind of era that they had. I mean, that's good basketball. I know what when I watch the Hawks on TV, that's not good basketball. That's really all I know, dude. But
oh my gosh.
Yeah, I would give anything to be Arthur Blank's kid. I'm not going to lie to you.
Man, Arthur Blank. I will just never. The biggest thing with him is that time period where he wouldn't allow Georgia high school state championships to happen in Mercedes-Benz. Like, dude, what is your issue? Like, that is just unbelievable to me. Like, that was the most to me where I was like, are you joking me? You can't open up your stadium for a weekend or a week for freaking high school state championships, dude.
Yeah. But now like they're back said, in there. It's only a weekend, too. It's not like it's, we need a month set aside for GHSA. It's like, no, just a weekend.
Yeah, just so they can save a few bucks on the freaking AC or something, dude. What?
It's like, hey, but we have $2 hot dogs.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
You can get a Coke for $2 and a hot dog. God.
Yeah, but what we don't tell you is they probably taste terrible. But hey, they're cheap.
Yeah, continuing on the Falcons trend. The saga that we're going through with Kirk Cousins is just seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. Looks like we're going to have a $45 million backup quarterback for the year. The only thing that I keep seeing is that the Falcons are fielding calls for trades, but we're asking for way too much. It's like we either want too much draft capital or we want the other team to pay some of Kirk's salary. And to me, it's probably a little bit of both. We probably want to ship off some of the salary too. And we also want some draft capital in return. And the team that I just keep hearing for this is Cleveland, because they would be looking for a quarterback. And that would obviously, that would put him in a great spot to pick someone like Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter at two, rather than seemingly wasting a pick on Shador Sanders. Just wait a couple more years to draft that quarterback. I mean, they could be good with Kirk Cousins this year. I mean, Myles Garrett obviously re-signed for the most money ever seen by a defensive player. And they got a halfway decent. They've always had a good offensive line, which doesn't really make sense to me in Cleveland. But they have, normally, they have, I mean, they got all pros on the offensive line. And then they got some good receivers too. Jerry Jeudy, among others. Who else they have? You guys play against
Elijah Moore?
Okay,
or is he not good receivers? I don't know if he falls into that category.
Draft Travis Hunter too. I mean, I feel like that could solve some problems. Travis Hunter, Jerry Jeudy would be a pretty nice combo there. But yeah, it doesn't seem like the Falcons are anywhere near getting a deal done.
Yeah, I've never seen a more obvious bad move than just in tandem, the Kirk Cousins signing and the Michael Penix drafting, okay? Because if you look at those two things, you say, if you are in the camp of, ooh, Kirk Cousins was a good signing, then Michael Penix was a bad draft pick. If you subscribe to the Michael Penix was a good draft pick, then Kirk Cousins was a bad signing. Like, either way, it was a terrible decision, whichever you see it. Which, you know, me personally, when I look at it, I liked what I saw out of Penix in the last, you know, few games that he played, and I liked him at Washington. So, you know, I think we're all kind of in the same boat here. I don't know how you feel. The Kirk Cousins signing was just bad. It's just, there's no other way around it. I don't know who Kirk, I mean, I know this has been a conversation a lot, but whoever Kirk Cousins' agent is, this guy is a legend. This dude I want him negotiating my salaries and my contracts whenever I need somebody, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like I'm definitely in the boat of Michael Penix, I think, was a good draft pick. But if we knew we were going to do that, why in the world do you give Kirk Cousins $100 million guaranteed? Fully guaranteed. I mean, it was the original deal was like 140 over 4 years, I think, but when you really looked at it, it was 100 million guaranteed over three. So, yeah, these teams that we're trying to trade with, they're trying to make us eat the salary, and then they don't want to give up draft picks because the draft is coming very, very soon. Just can't wait to see how the Falcons are going to screw it up this year, dog. I mean, it's honestly one of my favorite events that I look forward to in all of NFL football because I mean, it's just an awesome thing, especially when you love college football and NFL football as much as we do. This is the only event that they kind of like, they just like come together and mesh. So, I mean, every year I get so excited for the draft, and then I go sit down on my couch that night, and then I realize who I'm a fan of. Someone who has seemingly never ever gotten the draft right in my time. I mean, I guess trading up for Julio was probably really good, but we gave up so much draft capital to trade up for Julio. It's honestly like, was it even worth it? With hindsight, now we know, yes, it was worth it. Arguably one of the best wide receivers of all time. But even at the time, it was just like, dude, like, what are we doing?
Yeah, this is the same energy of, at least with me with golf, I'm always so excited to go play golf. And for some reason, I always tell myself, I think I might shoot my best score ever today. Like, I don't know
You tell me
why.
that too.
I have no reason to be as confident as I am going into this round of golf, but I am. And then, of course, I go out and I shoot, hundreds or 115 or 98, something or another. And I'm like, wow, that sucked. And then the next time I come around, I'm feeling the same way. I'm going to shoot the best round of my life. That's the Falcons. You're so excited about the draft, even though you know that they're probably going to pick the wrong guy or reach for somebody, this, that, and the other. But then next year, you're right back there feeling it again.
Yeah, I know you always have the issue too of the Steelers being in that like not good enough to get a high draft pick, not bad enough, or not bad enough to get a high draft pick, not good enough to like, I don't know, but you always say that. Kind of in that same purgatory, except like at least y'all make the playoffs sometimes, purgatory. The Falcons are always going to be within that 10 to 15 range. I guess in the past couple of years, it's been 8 to 15. But yeah, I mean, I would be very interested to see what both of our teams do. At least you guys have a history of like actually drafting good players. That's kind of cool. I wish my team did that.
Yeah, that is the one thing I just hang my hat on is even though we do have the 20th pick or something, I am pretty confident that we at least get the most value out of the draft position that we're in. Of course, except for the Kenny Pickett year, that was
Yeah,
just
of
not
course.
good. And there are just other years where we don't really make good picks. And there's always teams have problems drafting certain positions. For us, we have never been able to hit on a corner or any type of DB early in the draft.
What about Joey Porter Jr.?
Well, with the exception of him, with the exception of him.
He's
Before
still
him,
got a
though,
lot
I
to
mean,
prove, though, for sure.
yeah, before him, I found myself getting excited that we drafted Artie Burns in the first round. That's a pull. And then we drafted freaking Sean Davis in the second round. And I thought these dudes were going to be the corner safety tandem of the future. And they
Yeah.
just turned out to not be good.
Yeah, I got one of
But
these lists in front of me. Total like draft capital power rankings. So
oh
it's
gosh.
something that I was looking at last night. If you had to guess who is last in draft capital power rankings, who would you guess?
Oh. Last in draft capital power, meaning like they just don't
Like
have a
the
lot of
least
picks.
amount of like good picks or yeah, it takes into account how many picks you have, when they are. But this team has significantly less picks than everyone else. It's not the
It's
Falcons
got
or
to be
Steelers.
a team that's of course not good because they don't have like players to draft like trade for, and a team that for some reason just traded a whole bunch of first round picks. I gotta go with the Panthers.
No, it's the Minnesota Vikings. They only have four picks. They have 24, 97, 139, and 187. But both of our teams are not far away from that list. So Minnesota's 32 last in draft capital. The Falcons are 30th and the Steelers are 29th. Yeah, y'all have one more pick than us. Well, y'all have 21, 83, 123, 156, 185, and 229. And we have 15, 46, 118, 218, and 242. We've now lost two of our picks for tampering, which is just fantastic. We gave up one for Matthew Judon, who got like a total of one sack last year. That's fantastic. Love it. Yeah, I believe that goes back on my opinion that we have the worst general manager in football and the oldest owner of all time. Dude's just like a walking corpse up there.
Oh my gosh. Well, on that topic, Jake, I'm glad you brought this up because this is a good segue because later in the week, with the draft very close, later this week on Thursday, we are going to be running our own draft simulation, I guess you call it mock draft, where on the which I'm going to lay it out here, Jacob. I'm pretty correct me if I'm wrong about any of this, but we are essentially going to come on here as we always do. But we are going to have PFF or whatever mock drafting website that we find is the best on here.
Probably
And we're
PFF.
essentially, probably PFF. And we are essentially going to be assigned teams. It might be picks. Maybe it's like a snake order where it's one, two, three, and then it goes back to
Also have
one. Or
Carter back on.
yes, Vlad the Brat. We will have Carter back on, and he will, of course, be mock drafting with us, and we'll figure out what draft order we go in. And essentially, we're going to be put on the clock under the pressure, and we're going to have to essentially just mock draft the entire 32 team field. We won't do trades or anything because, like, trades are just
Yeah.
no one knows trades or whatever. But we're just going to kind of put our draft knowledge to the test and see if we look when we look back on our mock draft and see how it actually works out and to see what players are actually good. And it'll just be good to see how we're feeling about certain players, who we want our teams to draft, who we think's good, who we don't. So I think it'll be a good little exercise and some good stuff.
Yeah, it'll be a fun little more interactive type of podcast that we do. I'll have the
Yes.
PFF pulled up on my screen. I'll share the screen, obviously, with the audience and with you guys. And just go through, have you guys tell me who to pick. And then I'll obviously have some of my input as well. Get ready to learn Emeka Egbuka. Get
Yeah,
ready to
we're
learn
not trying to spoil
Emeka
anything too early, but I think we know if Jacob gets tasked as the Falcon one, because we're also gonna have Carter here, and we're gonna make it to where one of them get the Falcons, because I think that's just fair. But
And you'll get the Steelers too, for sure. Even if we have to just go out of order, it'll be like, all right, it's the Steelers. Cole's going to take this.
And luckily PFF gives you kind of an instant feedback on what their opinion are of the picks, but I feel like their system is kind of messed up because I feel like anytime you pick a quarterback, they always say A plus. I've found that, but
Don't trust PFF with anything. None of
yeah, exactly.
their metrics or anything makes sense, but yeah, they have a good product out there. Nice little website.
No, yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, I mean, according to PFF, I mean, rushes or pass rushes or hurries are better than sacks, so
Yeah,
yeah, because apparently
sure.
Myles Garrett's just so much better than TJ Watt according to PFF, but we'll get to that another day.
That sounds like a topic for another day.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Jacob,
Yeah.
I kind of think that's gonna wrap us up here. Don't we hit on a good amount of topics? But yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to this mock draft episode that we do because I'm ready to put my GM hat on.
Me too. Time to put it on. I'm looking forward to it. We'll see you guys next Thursday. Remember to like, comment, subscribe to the channel on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts, wherever you find your podcasts. That would be fantastic. That's going to be it for episode 6.